Now, friends, we come to this 18th chapter of the book of Job, and here is where we get this second man, Bildad. This is the second one to speak, and this is his second time around. You see, we're getting rebuttal now, and so far there's been nothing new added. We had first Eliphaz, and he certainly didn't add anything new. He played the same record. And now Bildad, he comes on with another string of epigrams and pious platitudes and sick cliches, but nevertheless, some of them are good, but they're not applicable to the case of Job. And the thing that he says to him in a rather nice way, how long will it be ere you make an end of words? He says, why don't you shut up and start listening? And then he says, if you'll do that and start listening, afterwards we'll speak. Well, of course, his friend's been doing a good job of speaking also. Now listen to him as he begins. Then answered Bildad the Shuhite and said, how long will it be ere ye make an end of words? Mark, and afterwards we will speak. And you have the feeling here that all of them could have refrained from talking and been listening, but they'd have to listen to the voice of God. And they are not prepared for that at this time, and God is preparing Job to hear his voice. Now, he begins to put these little proverbs together one after another. Wherefore are we counted as beasts and reputed vile in your sight? Why do you look with contempt upon us? Well, the answer to that, of course, is obvious. That's the way they've been looking at Job. And this has just been a standoff. And they've been, I think, glaring at each other all this time. Those who came as friends are no longer his friends. And he then begins this line of platitudes now. He says, he teareth himself in his anger. Shall the earth be forsaken for thee, and shall the rock be removed out of his place? What he's saying to this man is, do you think God's going to run this universe just to suit you? Because, you see, this man was a traditionalist, and he rests everything on the past, and anything that was true in the past, it's good enough for today. That is the method that he uses. In other words, Job, cannot you show some sense so that we may come to an understanding here? Do you think that your contempt for us as incompetent, are your rage at the divine dealings going to release you now from the trap that you're in? Because listen to him now. Yea, the light of the wicked shall be put out, and the spark of his fire shall not shine. And nothing truer could be spoken than that, but that's not quite accurate to say that to Job, by the way. The light shall be dark in his tabernacle, and his candles shall be put out with him. The steps of his strength shall be straightened, and his own counsel shall cast him down. Now, notice, he's cast into a net by his own feet, and he walketh upon a snare. What he's saying to him, Job, you've been caught in a net like a fish. And it's not because we've done anything. We are supposed to be here to help you, and you don't listen to us. And you're in that position, and he comes back to the old charge that there's something in your life. You've just walked into a trap. And then he says in verse 9, the jinn shall take him by the heel, and the robber shall prevail against him. The jinn means the trap. The trap will take him. You've been caught like a bear in a trap because you've been fooling around with the bait, or you wouldn't have been caught. You see, he gives these little pious platitudes and writes QED after each one of them. That is, this is something that's proven, like a geometry problem. When you take all the steps, you come to a conclusion. And when you come to the conclusion, that's it. But life is not quite like that. And you can get some wrong premises. If your premises are accurate, of course, you can come up with a good deduction. But if all your premises are wrong, why, you see, in a geometric problem, if A equals 10 and you make it equal 15, you're going to have trouble with the answer, though you may use the right method. These men are putting down their formula, and they're coming up with the wrong premises to put in the formula. And each one of them does that. But he comes back and makes it a hard, fast rule that he's just walked into a trap, and it couldn't be otherwise. And then he goes on to say here, "For he is sent into the net by his own feet, and he walketh on the meshes." And that is a little different translation, but it's exactly what he's saying here to Job. Then he goes on to tell him that disease shall waste the body of the wicked, and the fire of God's going to destroy his habitation, and his name shall be blotted out. His family shall perish, and he's going to have neither son nor grandson. And his desolation shall astonish future generations. And friends, that's true, but it's not applicable to Job at all. That is the thing, that you can say something true that has no present application at all to an individual. And that's the reason that a great deal of so-called counseling today is dangerous. Many think that I have certain hang-ups. For instance, I go after psychologists, not individuals, but as a group I do. I think there are many fine Christian psychologists. I know some of them, and I'd recommend them. But very candidly, there are some of them that their premises are not accurate. And for that reason, they are not able to counsel. And these men were not able to counsel Job. The wicked are going to be judged. The wicked will have this happen to them. They'll be blotted out in our day. Look what happened to Hitler. Look what happened to Stalin. Look what's happened to other of the dictators of Khrushchev, for instance, died in ignominy by the same crowd that had elevated him to a high position. As they live, they die. And that's true. But you don't apply that to Job. He's not that kind of a man by any means. Now in verse 18, let me put in there, "He shall be driven from light into darkness and chased out of the world." And that's quite a figurative expression of the wicked, but it's not applicable to Job at all. Now, he goes on to say that he's going to have neither son nor nephew among his people, nor any remaining in his dwellings. Well, a man likes to have a son or a daughter and grandchildren. It's something that you can be proud of. And sometimes the wicked seem to have more than anyone else. But the thing is true here that Job now, and it's a cruel thing to give him at this time because he doesn't have a child left. They've all been slain. But God's going to make it up to him, and we'll see that when we come to it. And verse 21, now the last verse of the 18th chapter, "Surely such are the dwellings of the wicked, and this is the place of him that knoweth not God." In other words, he is depicting the wicked and the position of the wicked, the end of the wicked, and it looks like Job is at the end of the row. And he says, now this is the way it is, and does it fit you, Job? And it does, by the way. But you see, they cannot believe that the thing that's happening to Job could happen to him for any other reason than the reason they've suggested. They just can't believe that it cannot. And Job is going to say that to them now when he answers them. He's saying to them, can't you conceive it possible that God has entangled me in his net and he's left his action unexplained? That there must be an explanation for it, but your explanation may not be right. And then the mistake Job is beginning to make, as you can see, is this. He knows they are wrong. But their being wrong did not make him right. His attitude is wrong too here. He has a wrong conception of God also at this time, although light breaks in from time to time.